just recently, and we're sort of changing gears admittedly here, many Americans filed their income tax returns. And here we are at the date of this interview, April 24th, and so tax day has passed us now. And incidentally, you helped many people complete their tax returns, and you do this each year, don't you?
Yes, I do.
In your experience, what is the biggest misconception that people have relative to that process and taxes more generally?
Well, I think probably the largest concept is that they should avoid taxes if at all possible. And technically, I believe that's probably their responsibility. Good stewardship says obey the law, but the law does not require you give more taxes than necessary. So use the benefits available. However, I think most people look at taxes as unnecessary in their lives. Now, it's necessary for the populace as a whole, but not for their lives. And 49% of American families do not pay income tax. Now, that may come as a surprise to you, but that's the facts that the Internal Revenue prints. 49% do not pay income tax. Now, they pay taxes. All of us pay taxes because there's so many taxes that are hidden and laid on purchases. That, you know, it's amazing. I've got three different kinds of taxes on my phone bill, three different kinds of taxes. they don't make me happy because, for one thing, most taxing agencies do not spend tax receipts very well. There is no fiscal accountability, seemingly, in this country. And there's frustration with that by those who, especially by those who do pay taxes. So I think it's just a misunderstanding of purpose and intent and extent.
That almost raises another question there that perhaps we can pursue on another occasion about when civil disobedience might be necessary in the arena of paying taxes. But, of course, you're here under normal circumstances advocating that part of rendering to Caesar that which is his requires that we pay taxes even if we disagree with the rate.
Right. Well, I enjoy wonderful highways made possible by taxes. I enjoy the protection of an army by virtue of taxes. There's a lot of reason for taxes, but how they're used and the extent of their use is left for debate.
Well, let's stick with that subject for just a moment. We're coming off of an election year, and during that time there was a great deal of discussion about potential changes to the tax code. Really nothing new there. This often comes up and sometimes enjoys bipartisan support, at least the idea of changing the code. But given the economic situation that we have, not only in this country but globally, it does seem like there very well may be some significant changes coming our way in light of all the fiscal challenges that are being faced, both, again, at home and abroad. As you see things, given our trajectory as a country, as a global economy, is there a particular trend or change that you think is most likely to affect the church in the near future and just especially individual Christians with their personal finances?
Well, I think probably the charitable deduction is the number one issue that is at risk for a Christian. However, unfortunately, most Christians do not use the charitable deduction because Uncle Sam gives a married couple $11,900 of exemption without any proof of deduction. And most people don't give that much. So they don't get to use the charitable deduction. I think therefore what we look at and see is that it's going to be used against the higher paying, the higher giving individuals, whether They're in the lower income bracket or in the upper income bracket, but it will be justified because it's the upper income bracket people who use it more frequently. So it's that tax the rich and relieve the lower income people. My biggest complaint with the tax system as we've got it right now, as I fill out taxes for a number of people who do not pay any taxes but get refunds. Because the tax system has a welfare portion in it now. And it's confused everyone.
So when politicians, just to clarify the point, when politicians recently have been discussing the fact that there's a lot of money being given away, a lot of revenue being given away through the tax code, are some of them, do they have this particular scenario in mind?
Some of them do.
Okay. Well, it would be interesting to pursue that a little bit further, but let's shift gears for just a moment. And I want us to, because many of the people that read this transcript on the site or people in our church who listen to this, there will be pastors in that lot. And so, first off, as you think about your experience pastoring and working with churches through the years, what are some of the most significant changes that have taken place in the way that churches deal with finances, whether from the standpoint of church treasurers and how they're operating versus the way churches carry out their financial operations?
Well, I'm struggling to get a handle on exactly what you're asking, but I think one of the things is our churches have more information available to them in structuring salary packages than they used to have. So a pastor may be paid X number of dollars and protect a number of those dollars from tax or even possibly from Social Security taxation. Preachers have a unique position in the tax code. We are, for income tax purposes, we're always self-employed. For Social Security tax purposes, we're always self-employed. But we often pay taxes as an employee. We have the housing allowance provision that enables us to receive non-taxable income in providing housing for ourselves, but it is subject to Social Security tax. So there's confusion going on there. And many of our treasurers do not understand that, even though there is information available to help them. And the Free Will Baptist Foundation offers advice and counsel to anyone who wants to seek personal information about that. I think other agencies in our denomination would also provide some, but I know the foundation is equipped to do that, and so is the Board of Retirement. Both those agencies encourage pastors to take advantage of the law, the tax law, and the shelters that are provided.
As we think about pastors listening to this and pastors who will read this, if you could give some advice, maybe just one piece of advice to, say, older pastors about their personal finances, or even as it relates to their churches, let's say those 50 and 60 and older who are in ministry, what would you want to say to them?
I think I want to say two things. One is I would want to encourage every one of them to look very carefully at future housing. One of the major challenges they're going to face is housing. If they do not own their home, they're going to have to live somewhere. And the second one impacts this first one. The second one is, when are you going to retire? I do not want to discourage older pastors, but I do want older pastors to face the reality that they are not able to do all they used to do. And intelligence and experience doesn't make up for everything. There comes a time when pastors will retire. if death doesn't catch them in the pulpit, they're going to retire, and therefore they need to be prepared for that. And it's much better emotionally for them and for the church, for them to recognize that and step aside before they are forced to do so. That is not good for either the pastor or the church. And oftentimes it comes when it's too late for the church. Because it's really hard for churches to say to a man, it's time for you to retire. They shouldn't have to. But I know we've, as a denomination, we have not done a good job of preparing our men and providing for them. There's been some changes. It's improved. But it's not improved for the vast majority. We do not have really that many churches that are full-time churches. When I say full-time, I'm talking about a pastor can actually live and provide housing and hospitalization and everything else from that income. Most of our guys are sacrificing to do pastoral work. Some are doing it bivocationally, and some are just suffering with low incomes.
What about, let's say, the group changes here as you think about the people you have in your mind, younger pastors? I myself, I'm 28 years old. Not a lot of pastors in that age range, in our movement at least, but there are some, 30s, maybe early 40s. What kind of financial advice and admonitions would you want to give them?
I would want to say real quick, learn early to live on less than you make. I think it's Randy Alcorn says there's a three-step process in handling your budget. Give first. That's the tithe. A minimum of the tithe. Give your tithe. Save second. Spend third. I read a book by James, I can't even remember whether his name was James or not, but a guy named Bowman, a little moody book put out back in the early 60s. And he basically said the same thing. So I looked at it and ignored it to my shame. And we must, as young men, spend less than we make. And we must spend a minimum early on, or we get used to a lot. So we need to save and we need to give. There is no excuse for not giving to the Lord. I believe the man who honors the Lord in his giving will be helped in the process. That doesn't mean God's going to drop buckets of gold on you. It just means you may be healthier. You may have better opportunities, whatever. But I believe he helps. But you've got to start early saving. And I think you need to start with a board of retirement. Get some money going in there. And I'm confident that there are a few fellows out there who can invest the money better than the board of retirement does. But they're very few. For one reason, diversification is not something they look at and the Board of Retirement does. Conservative investments and the Board uses church covenant to limit some investments. We never would invest in anything that's primary product was alcohol, tobacco, gambling, pornography, Hollywood entertainment, those kind of things. We eliminated that. Most young men don't have enough money to be able to do that too well. And then the other thing is you don't need to become an investment advisor. You don't need to become proficient in investment. You need to become proficient in preaching and ministering to your people. And so it takes a lot of time, a lot of research to do it well, and most men don't have it. So I say, let someone else do that for you. But get your budget under control. remember, you can drive used cars cheaper than you can drive new cars. You can provide the insurance protection you need for life insurance with term policies at a very cheap rate as opposed to whole life. And I know that when you have a term policy, you get down the road 30, 40 years, it's no good. It's gone. But all you need is protection for a period of time, not forever. And you can buy it much cheaper with term insurance and invest the difference so that you will have permanent money.
I think that's a point that we'll have to take up even further after this interview. We have a young man who sells insurance in our church, and he and I have had this conversation several times. So the essays that we publish on the forum frequently explore Christian thought and practice from many, many ages ago, centuries ago. We believe that there is just so much that we can learn from the great Christian tradition that we're just ignorant of many times. And so part of what we're trying to do is to bring that greater tradition. We want to become conversant with that great tradition, 2,000 years of Christian thought, and even beyond that, if you count the Judeo-Christian tradition. In your time thinking about these things, have you found anything from that tradition that helps us on this matter? Are there particular figures that we should be listening to in the 21st century? And if so, who are those voices?
Okay. Without fail, I would say that the early church fathers were vehement on tithing. I mean, they were strong tithers, and they emphasized it very emphatically. So I think the ring from the ancients would be the Lord hasn't changed his plan on supporting his work. Today, there are a number of voices that I think are very, very good in addressing 20 and 21st century concepts. I think probably one of the best I've ever read is Randy Alcorn. He has a number of books out. He is extensive in his dealings. Ron Blue.
I recently saw that Broadman and Holman had a book called Perspectives on Tithing. And actually, we did have someone review that for the forum. And though I didn't read the book, there were four perspectives that were presented in that book. So who knew there were four different views on tithing?
Well, I think Dave Ramsey's got some good things to say to us about finances. Larry Burkett, Crown Ministries, as a publisher of materials, has some good things for Sunday school and church programs. I think we need all the help we can get. And I think it needs to be carefully considered. Now, I can't sit here and tell you that I agree with any one of these 100%. There are areas where I differ with them on some of their approaches. But what we're talking about are minor adjustments, not major points. And they all say we are accountable to God for every penny we get, and debt is a killer. We need to manage debt very carefully. Most of them are just death on debt, with the exception possibly of a house. And most of us, if we start like I started, out of college with nothing. Now, fortunately, I didn't have any college debt when I graduated, but I didn't have anything. And so I started from ground zero and began to work up. I got a used car for a graduation present from college, and that was my vehicle, 1955 Chevy, and I graduated in 62. So, you know, it was several years old, and it was my dad's car, worn out, but he overhauled it and gave it to me. That's a place to start. Carefully handling automobiles. They're a terrible expense for young men. And you have to be careful because you can get head over heels with a new car. And then when you get your budgets under control and you listen to these guys and you weigh and sift through with using your sifter, everybody has to make things personal. And so you personally take your situation, take their information, their advice, and counsel, and then design a program under the leadership of God to do what you need to do. And when you look down the road, everybody starts at the beginning, and nobody knows where the road's going to lead, how many turns or how many disasters are going to be there. But we start with the same God we're going to end up with.
So we're past the 50-year mark now in the ministry of Bill and Brenda Evans, correct?
Yes.
What do the next few years look like as far as you're concerned?
Well, someone asked me, what am I doing? And I never know too far in advance. We are traveling. We're obviously writing articles. We're interviewing people. We're filling the pulpits, various places. I cannot see any time when I'm going to have to worry about what am I going to be doing a few months from now. I'm doing volunteer tax work every spring with AARP. I'm doing private counseling with individuals and families on financial matters, substitute teacher in Sunday school, and fields wide open. I believe in retirement, but I don't believe in sitting down.
We almost need to perhaps come up with a different term, don't we?
Yes, we do.
One for when you retire, and then one from for the other period of time,
yeah. Yeah. I think one fella said unpaid work. But I contended at the Board of Retirement that retirement was to help, to enable us to help people when they couldn't afford to pay us. I believe the laborer is worthy of his hire. I believe that. I believed it right along. But if a man's got his retirement provided, he doesn't have to be paid. If the individual or the church or whatever can, they should. But there are many of our churches that can't afford it. They need some specialized help. And those of us guys who are retired and have our income already secured, we can do that.
Well, I think that's a good note for us to end on. We've been, again, so fortunate to have you here answering these questions for us. And I know many people will benefit from this. Even after you're no longer with us, we, of course, will have you here one more service tonight at Grace Church. We're looking forward to that for how the Lord will use you as we look back on this meeting even later, perhaps. And hopefully this is a conversation we can revisit sometime.
I would look forward to it.
Thank you so much.